I was thinking, you know, Gino has such a high level of energy, and it's sometimes interesting to step into that. So I thought maybe I could do my talk like, "Hello, everybody!" Because we like it when you get all growly like that, don't we? Hallelujah! Okay, I have no voice now, so, all right. Anyway. There is a technique, yes. Yeah. We'll talk. Okay. Right. So the name of this particular presentation here, this sermon, is Everything is Waiting for You, and it's based on that poem that Hugh read, that beautiful poem by David White. And it's also based on a piece that I wrote in a blog. I have this blog called Daily Beloved, and haven't written in it for a while. But but the last piece that I wrote was about my nephew, Shep. My great-nephew, my sister Judy, was in town. Many of you met her last week when she was in town. She was in town to visit her son, David, and his wife, Sylvia, and they have a little baby named Shep, who's 2 years old. And, you know, I chose not to have children, and I haven't been around children a lot, but there's something about Shep and me. We have this bond going on, you know? He is very, very connected to me. And I think it has to do with the singing, because I know a wealth of silly songs. Does anybody know, boop, boop, diddum, dadum, wadum, choo? Boop, boop, diddum, dadum, wadum, choo? Boop, boop, diddum, dadum, wadum, choo? And we swim and they swim all over the dam. Right. Okay, yeah. So let's all sing this one. He likes this one, too. I like big butts and I cannot lie. Maybe we should stop right there, okay. But one of the songs is kind of, not as many people know it. I'm curious as to whether you know it. It's just a song that I learned as a child, and we had a picture book that went with it. And you can still get the picture book. It's called The ABC Bunny. Do you guys know that one? It's A for apple, big and red. Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. Do you know this? B for bunny, snug a bed. Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. C for crash. That's the apple. C for crash. D for dash. E for elsewhere in a flash. Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. Elsewhere in a flash, tra-la. And Shep, thank you, thank you. Elsewhere in a flash, tra-la. Sheppy loves that song, and my sister and I hadn't sung it since, you know, 30 years ago, so we were curious about the words. We couldn't remember all the words because, of course, there's something for every letter of the alphabet, and, you know, when you're getting down X, Y, Z, it's a challenge, you know. So she found it on her iPad, and this was during Thanksgiving dinner, by the way, where we had probably 50 people in the house, and probably 15 of them were under 9 years old. And Shep was off playing with his friends. My sister Judy found the ABC Bunny song on the iPad. She started playing it, and we were sitting on the couch together. And Shep, all of a sudden, heard it. He dropped his toys, he ran away from the children, and he climbed up on my lap, and he sat there to listen to the words of the song. And I didn't want it to stop, ever. And it had such an impact on me. I felt the weight of this small boy in my lap for days, and I wondered what that was really about. You know, certainly I'm familiar, very familiar with the play Our Town, where Emily dies in the third act. She dies in childbirth, and she comes back to Grover's Corners, and she asks if she can live one more day. But she lives this day aware of everything that's going around with her, and it becomes too painful for her that she missed it all while she was alive. And so she says, I have to go back, I have to go back. And she starts saying goodbye to sunflowers and starch sheets and the smell of coffee. And she says, oh, Earth, you are too beautiful for anyone to realize you. Does anybody ever realize life when they live it? And the stage manager says, well, maybe I should have you come and say this in a New Hampshire accent.
Saints and poets, maybe. They do some.
Yeah. That wasn't a New Hampshire accent, though, was it?
Do it.
Okay. Do it again. Do it again with a New Hampshire accent.
No.
Okay. It's stuck. he's done the role on stage, but I guess you can't just jump into that. You got to get into character. So anyway, yeah, saints and poets can sometimes realize the power and the beauty of life when they know it. Saints and poets realize that everything is waiting for us. Everything is here. And so that's my intention for us today, is that we are like the saints and the poets, that we evolve into that place where we live like the saints and the poets, where we know that everything is waiting for us. Everything is waiting for us. Everything not only is waiting for us, everything is here for us already. We're the ones who are waiting. And the only catch is to stop waiting and to learn to start receiving everything that is here for us. So much good that we can't even imagine. Some of us may be wondering, but wait a minute. She doesn't know my life. She doesn't know the problems that I have. She doesn't know the challenges that I'm up against. She doesn't know some of the troubles that I've lived through and some of the things that I'm facing right now. Maybe instead of feeling like everything is waiting for you or everything is here for you, we may feel like nothing is going right. Nothing is here for us. However, last weekend, many of you, I think, were here last weekend when we had the 17 children from India come. And they taught me something, and I'm assuming they taught us something. Just giving a little bit of background, I've been involved with this organization that is partially up in Northern California and partially in India for the last 7 or 8 years now. And one of the things that we as a congregation did is that we raised money to bring these 17 children from the slums of India to come over here and to do a show about kindness and compassion. And they came to the church to say thank you to us and also just to share their love. And yet, these children have nothing from a material standpoint. You know, when they were here last week, I didn't dwell a lot on the way that they live, but I spent quite a bit of time in the slums the last time I was in India, and many of these children live in rooms and houses without solid walls, with tarps and aluminum, corrugated aluminum put up. They don't have running water. They struggle with getting enough food. They don't have electricity. They struggle with sanitation. They don't have the same cultural background that we did. Several of us went to Disneyland with them. One little girl, a 17-year-old girl, took my hand as soon as we walked through the gate, and she said, "I will remember this day my entire life." We said we were going to go on the Indiana Jones ride. And they said, "Who's Indiana Jones?" They didn't really know who Mickey Mouse was. They had watched a documentary on Walt Disney the night before, so they knew who Walt Disney was, and in that documentary they learned who Mickey Mouse was as well. So in some ways, to us, it may have seemed like they had nothing, but those of us that were here, didn't it also seem like they had everything? They had so much to give. So many lives were transformed by their simple offering. You know, in the time that I spent with them, it just moves my heart to know that I would come into a room and they'd all start saying, "Bonnie Dee Dee, Bonnie Dee Dee," which means Bonnie Big Sister. "Bonnie Dee Dee, Bonnie Dee Dee." You know, they'd say that for all of us, Bonnie Dee Dee or Bonnie Ben, which is also like sister. My real sister, Judy, the one who was playing the ABC Bunny with my nephew, this little girl came up to me and was hugging me and saying, "Bonnie Dee Dee, Bonnie Dee Dee," and then she knelt down and she touched my sister Judy's feet as a sign of respect. And what a beautiful offering that is. You know, and they sang their songs and they did their show, and yet it seemed, again, to American eyes, to eyes from this culture, that they had nothing. So how did they have nothing but also seem like they had everything? And how can we? I think it's a matter of consciousness. It's how we define everything. I was at dinner with I call them the Canadians. They're all sitting over there. So Hugh's relatives, two of Hugh's children, and we'll introduce you later, okay? Well, anyway, I was at dinner with the Canadians in a Mexican restaurant. And one of the Canadians, John, my stepson John, asked, what do you talk about in your church? And I said, well, non-duality and paradox and absolute reality. And then we changed the subject, didn't we? But that's, you know, that's where I go when we ask the hard questions, like how is it that those children seem to have nothing and everything at the same time? And how is it that when we feel like we have nothing or when nothing is going right, how can we feel like we also have everything? I think that absolute reality and non-duality and paradox are the answers. Let me see what I mean about that. See if I can explain it, John, and there will be a quiz on this after the service. Absolute reality is the belief that there is one wholeness that embraces everything. Within absolute reality, there are pairs of opposites, darkness and light, good and evil, sickness and health, better and worse. I'm doing the marriage vows now in case you don't recognize them, richer and poorer. Within all of these opposites, there is this wholeness that embraces all of it, and it is all for us. It is all for us, and it is all happening all of the time, but our experience of it is governed by our relative perception, by what we are choosing to focus on. If we are choosing on lack versus abundance, we will experience lack. But if we are looking at something that appears like lack and says, oh, this is abundance waiting to happen, then our experience becomes abundance, right? So that's how absolute reality works, in a nutshell. Another one of my absolute reality, non-duality teachers is Rupert Spira, and I was listening to a video by him yesterday, to support this conversation that we're having this morning, and I came across a video that said, the real goal of life. I'm like, well, I want to know what that is. I doubt it's eat as many chocolate chip cookies as you possibly can. So, very simple. This person was talking to Rupert Spira. He was obviously in a bit of distress, and he asked him, what is the purpose of life? What is the goal of life? What is the purpose? And Rupert Spira just very simply said, the purpose of life is happiness. Ah. Can everyone just sigh with me? I thought it was going to be something more academic or more, you know, more like achievement-oriented, but it's just happiness. It's like my friend Jeff says, the surfer on the ocean that's having the best surfer on the ocean is the one that's having the best time, right? What if the best liver, not, so I have it on this side, not liver, but the best life liver is the person who's having the best time. He went on to describe what happiness is, and he said, happiness, true happiness, is knowing who you are. Remembering who you are, remembering the true nature of your being, which is wholeness, which is that unbroken wholeness that I was talking about before when I was speaking of absolute reality. That is what happiness is. And that happiness is not dependent upon any object whatsoever. When spirit created the world, or the void created the world, or whatever created the world, let's say consciousness. Consciousness created the world out of itself so that it might have experience. So consciousness created existence. And the way it disguised itself as adversity and challenge and struggle and ego and separate self so that we would have the divine experience of discovery, of discovering that truly we are consciousness, we are existence, but all in all, we are all that is. We are the wholeness that is consciousness. And there's a joy in discovery to that. It's a good thing that we can't always see it. I had a teacher when I was in the school of ministry who was a counseling teacher, and he was talking about how to counsel people, and he had six children, and he said one year he had gotten his youngest son, 6 years old, and he really, really wanted a two-wheeler, a bicycle, and all the kids knew about it, and they were so excited about getting this kid this bicycle. So they ran down the stairs to the Christmas tree, and one of the older boys ripped the package off of the bicycle. And the little kid who was supposed to get it, the six-year-old, was excited. But my teacher said, how wonderful it is instead to allow people to open their own packages. And Spirit provides us with this gift by providing us with obstacles or providing us with things that seem like they're in the way of everything waiting for us or having everything. Spirit provides us this gift so that we can rip off the packages ourselves and have the divine gift of opening up a surprise and seeing what Spirit has in store for us, hidden, the wholeness hidden in adversity. In Sanskrit, Sat Chittananda, right? Sat, existence, Chit, consciousness, and Ananda is bliss. That's where that happiness piece comes in. It's not Sat Chit whining, right? It's not Sat Chit complaining about others. It's Sat Chit Ananda, bliss. Bliss is both the destination and the journey to our purpose in life. The full realization of happiness. And the happiness that is not dependent upon any object. Because when Spirit created out of the void, created existence out of itself, it created infinite objects, but we are infinite subject. Because we are connected, we are made in the image and likeness of that Creator. You get that? You get that? You get that, Toby? You get that, Lenine? Oh, good, okay. You get that? Okay. Oh, I love picking on. I love picking on people. It's really fun. Feel free to heckle me back anytime if you like. So I think that's how we have everything and nothing at the same time. Really, we are mostly empty space. We are nothing, and yet we have everything because we are empty space and we are nothing. You know, I always go back to this. I go back to us. It's a little nerdy. The guy who wrote it says, I'm the only person who read it and liked it. A friend of mine from up north is Indian. But he talks about how zero is actually everything. Because zero is the sum total of every single number, positive and negative, extending infinitely into the vast unknown. And if you add all of those numbers up, it's zero. Zero contains everything. So we practice our nothingness. We practice our self-emptying. We practice releasing that which does not serve us. We practice letting go of that which seems to tell us, the illusion that tells us that we can't have everything because we already do have everything. It's Sat Chit Ananda, existence, consciousness, and bliss. All of it waiting for us. All of it waiting to be received. All of it waiting to be welcomed. A few practices. Because all of this stuff takes practice. It's not like we're just shot out of the... Oh, I can't do it. Can somebody make a popping noise? Good. Shot out of the womb. Knowing all of this stuff. We may know it for a few minutes, right? We may know it for a few years, but then the illusion and the race consciousness and our training and our teachers and whatever it is starts to impinge upon us so that we don't know that we are everything and that we have everything. So, and that's a beautiful thing. That's what's supposed to happen, so that we can practice and open up our own packages, right? So some ways of practicing. Well, one is to really recognize your gifts and know what they are and give your gifts freely. Those children from India, you know, a large part of their gift was singing and dancing, but really they were selected not only for that reason. They were selected through their willingness to participate in the values of the program, which is exuberant giving and exuberant loving and exuberant care of others and care of self. You know, we gave them a lot of presents when we were here. We got a little carried away because I got them some stuff and then some other people got them some stuff. And I know that they live very simply and that they also have suitcases that they have to take all over the country and the world. And I finally said to Nemo, is this okay? Is this okay that we're giving them so much stuff? Does this coincide with your values? And he said, oh, yes, absolutely, because the children made a decision before they came here that if anybody gave them presents, they were going to pay them forward to their brothers and sisters. Back in India. They came up with that idea by themselves. Not only their family brothers and sisters, but their extended brothers and sisters. He said, that way it feels like more of them got to go on this tour. That way it widens the circle of love. So we have our gifts and we give them away. You know, whenever I go to a service-based event up north in Marin or in India, I always say to myself, I will do whatever they ask me to do. I will serve in whatever capacity they ask me to serve. And then I go, please don't ask me to valet park. Please don't ask me to valet park. Because I cannot back. I can go forward, okay, but backing up, as evidenced by the 3 wrecks I've had in my driveway since I got my Prius like 6 months ago. And usually God takes care of me and I get to do something that I'm good at and I like to do. But it is so wonderful to go through life saying, just use me, let me serve in whatever capacity is needed. So that's one way to practice. Another way to practice is to be mindful about the consciousness of trying to change the world and change other people. I used to say, don't change other people, because it doesn't work very well. Has anybody successfully changed somebody? Sometimes you do need to give feedback and you need to give a little boundary or something like that. So I say, be mindful about the consciousness of changing other people. You can certainly give feedback, you can certainly set a boundary, but the key part is remaining unattached to whether or not they respond in the manner that you wish they would respond, right? So we change the world, and we may try and change other people. It pains me to say that, but we may try and change other people. It's not like I don't do it every day, but it still pains me to say it. We may try and change other people, but the key is to allow people to be who they are and remain detached from the result. Remain detached from the result. I thought that was so beautiful when Nemo Patel, who was the leader of the Indian children, was talking about how in the visa process, they were trying to change the visa process, and the kids, it was like a week before they had to leave, and they couldn't get their visas. And rather than saying, we got to change this, we got to make this happen, he was like, maybe we're not supposed to go. Maybe we're not supposed to go. Maybe the real action is purifying ourselves in response to what is going on. So if there is somebody that you feel is extremely change-worthy, anybody know anybody really change-worthy? Somebody that you desperately want to change? If somebody is extremely change-worthy, absolutely knock yourself out. Try and change them. A little. But also, perhaps do the work of purifying, which is detaching from whether or not they are going to change according to your will. And then there was one more thing that we can do. Well, there's probably a lot more things that we can do to practice, but the one that I thought of was just to be like Emily in Our Town and start naming and listing and seeing all of the beauty around us now. Don't wait until we're on our deathbed, because Carly Simon, the prophet Carly Simon, said these are the good old days, right? These are the good old days. Yesterday I was hiking up in Sulphur Mountain, and there were about 1,000 butterflies up there, painted ladies, and this bicycle rider came up, and butterflies seem to like people on bicycles. Did you know that? If you want to attract butterflies, get on a bicycle, because every bicycle rider I passed had a cloud of butterflies around them. And the first one came up, and he said good morning to me, and I had the dogs with me, and I said good morning to him. And he said, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? You know what I said? Everything is waiting for us. Because it is. Let us take these words into our hearts and remember that not only is everything waiting for us, it's not a when I get my act together, then everything will be available for me. It is an immediate proposition. Right now, everything is waiting for you. Will you say yes to it? Yes. 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 Good job. Good yes. All right. All right. Let's not applaud or anything. Let's just, if you want to applaud, just do a little like that. There we go. Okay. That felt good, didn't it? Yes. And let's turn within and let's pray.